My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I am so, so happy to be with you today. I do hope that you are enjoying our series on codependency if you are joining us in the middle of the series. And if you were looking for something to help you with the topic at hand, welcome, welcome. I do hope that today's episode assists you in breaking patterns of codependency, especially in how it looks with your financial health. So I know in the lesson that's about to follow, I gave a full intro into why we need to talk about financial codependency. But for the sake of the series, I decided to include financial codependency, this lesson, because I know that this is one of the main markers of the ways that the women that I serve act out their codependency with their loved ones. So in addition to maybe mentally, emotionally, spiritually, not being able to have clear boundaries with other people, taking on their burdens when it's not your responsibility, the inability to actually put down limits when you are starting to be affected by what other people are taking from you, or if you're giving a little bit too much, that happens as well in your financial relationships too, especially if you are part of an immigrant family household, if you have been the oldest child, if there has been some type of trauma, if there's been narcissistic abuse. Because one thing that I've said before I go any further, just to be clear, I think codependency is just a mass version of our superpowers, of generosity, of being faithful, of being loyal, of being empathic, of really being someone who's available to help other people, for being thoughtful. Talking about family ties and family values and family relationships, we should be coming together in a family household and supporting each other and helping with what we have and giving, you know, as much as we can. The problem when it comes to financial codependency is typically we are picking people where there is no end to what they're going to take from us. There's usually entitlement on the other side. There is a lack of responsibility with what they do with the funds that we give them. There is lack of gratitude. So in addition to the entitlement, there's lack of acknowledgement of what they're giving and how they're giving. And so all this actually transcends to forms of emotional abuse as well. So not only financial codependency, maybe financial abuse, but in how they're interacting with how they are either directly telling us or subtly showing us, indirectly telling us where we are prioritized in their life or how we're not prioritized. All these are things that show up. So I decided to include this episode. This was part of a money trauma series that I did over a year and some change ago now, but I think it applies. So if financial codependency piques your interest, whether or not you feel that you relate to the definition, maybe don't know the definition, but you're like, maybe that might be something I need to listen to. Like if your spidey sense is telling you that, then I do hope that you find what you need in this podcast episode and that it helps connect you to resources that you may need on the other end of it. So for this one, not only do we have the worksheet available in the BGH Members Club at blackgirlsheal.org/members, but the money rehab program is also available, but you'll hear about that in the episode. So with all that said, let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I hope that you're doing well and thriving wherever you are, however you are, and in all of your relationships. Today, we are talking about something that is very important and something that I feel affects so many of the women that I serve, and it is financial codependency. I'm going to talk more about it after the jump, but basically, it is a pattern where you have a codependent relationship with caretaking for other people financially, even when it puts you in harm's way, mentally, emotionally, of course, financially, and causes undue strain. And you have a really unhealthy balance with the ability to say no, with this obligated feeling that you have to be the person that's available to take care of other people's needs. Otherwise, it means something negative about you. And so you actually have an addictive cycle when it comes to rescuing other people and not taking care of yourself. Because codependency at its core is really about being generous and empathic and having a gift of mercy and seeing other people's needs and being kind. Those are really positive traits. But when we cross the line into codependency is when we start to put ourselves in harm's way and we start to abandon our needs. When we have thoughts that are like, well, I need it, but they need it more. Or it'll work out, it's okay. And you kind of try to mute and repress what you're feeling and what you're needing because of the greater good being the other person, even though it is damaging to you. So again, I'm going to talk more about that after the break, and I'm going to talk about what it looks like to break this cycle and some things to expect if you do decide to break this cycle. So that's it for now. Let's go ahead and jump on in. Okay, so earlier this year, I did the Winter Workshop series, right? And I had about 2-3 episodes. It was a 4-part workshop series, and I had 2-3 episodes related to whatever topic I was teaching at the time. And one of the topics that I talked about was money trauma. And so there was a really big focus on those of us who may overspend, may live in deprivation, those of us who may money hoard, those of us who may be over-debting. So some of us are overspending, but we have the financial funds to do so, but it's causing a lot of distress. Some of us are overspending and we don't have the financial funds to do so. Some of us may have money trauma when it comes to gambling. And some of us may have money trauma that shows up by way of feeling a lot of shame around money, hiding from money, or feeling like we need to compulsively give money away. And so financial codependency is definitely underneath that window. So when I Google the definition of financial codependency, at the top of the results, it says it is a type of relationship dysfunction that occurs when one person prioritizes another person's financial needs over their own. It can happen in many different types of relationships, including romantic partnerships, families, and friendships. And so the two ways, well, actually, I've seen this in all three ways for folks who are in recovery from love addiction and love avoidance. Hey there. Okay, I'm dropping in post-edit because I'm about to talk about, as far as the examples with romantic partnerships, being with someone who may less than you. And I know that this is going to really center around a lot of heterosexual relationships, or the words that I'm using are going to center around heterosexual relationships. So I want to make it very clear right now. I am going to be describing relationships where the person who is making less than you is exploiting you. And what is happening is causing a big financial drain. And it is not what you ended up signing up for. There are so many relationships where one partner in heterosexual partnerships, one partner makes more than the other, and they are able to find a way to work it out. So that is your story. This does not apply to you. But if it is, if there is an imbalance and all the things that I'm about to describe do apply to you, it is okay for you to get to this. It's okay for you to own that this is your truth so that you can create changes that actually benefit you and break you out of this pattern of financial codependency. So just wanted to give that disclaimer. Let's go ahead and jump back in. I've seen so many women who will get into relationships with partners where they are the financially dominant person, which is totally fine when you feel like the person is giving and showing up equally. However, what ends up happening with so many women who I support and who I watch get into these partnerships is with people who are not only on a lower level, but it is that they have to use their funds to bridge the gap in ways that this person has been financially irresponsible and not been taking care of themselves and being self-accountable. But because my student, because my client is so used to being in relationships where he is always the one who comes in and saves and has the answers and can solve the problems, and she feels really happy and confident in doing that, she's attracted to these types of relationships, and she doesn't realize that this is what is happening until she is under the stress and the strain of this relationship. So whether or not she ends up having to lessen her lifestyle, whether or not she starts to lose her own confidence, whether or not she's not able to save and contribute to her own financial goals because she's always taking care of the emergencies, of the debts, of the fines, of the business ventures, of the obligations, of the threats of the other person. And she will continue to supply the needs for her partner or friends or family. I know I'm focusing on romantic partners right now, but this is across the board. She'll continue to finance the needs of these other people without limit. Even if she says, this is the last time, I'm not going to do it anymore, I can't do it, she continues to say yes. And she might even try to harp on how much strain this is for me. And don't you realize that this is really hard for me? And then the other person, because they know how to play onto the emotions of this very open-hearted, empathic person, they may do a tearful apology. They may say they know this is the last time, but it's not. And so my student, my client, the women I work with will continue to give and give and give, waiting for the day that this stabilizes, waiting for the potential that they see in this person, in this family member, in this friend, for the promises that they have given them over and over and over again to materialize. And, you know, we talk a lot about the sunken cost fallacy, which is this belief that it's really hard for you to let go of a person or a relationship because you spent so much time and energy and emotion and devotion to this person. There's this fear that if I walk away, it's going to be just the moment that something pops off and they change, or it's going to be just the moment that they're ready to transition to being exactly who I want them to be or who they've promised that they could be. And so when you add in money on top of it, which is deeply emotional, deeply financial, is even more so. Not only have you invested your heart and your mind, you have invested your funds. And so it's even harder to want to pull out of someone that you've invested hundreds, thousands, for some of you, millions of dollars into people, into relationships, and to just start to say no and go cold turkey. Not only do you have this obligation that you have to be there, that you have to be the one to save, that you, that is my fault. I'm the one that's trained them to financially depend on me. So is my fault to pull out, versus these are folks who have actively been a part of using you. They are not victims in this. They know exactly how to play upon your sympathy and your emotions. And I promise you, those of you who've already pulled away and done what I'm going to be talking with you about to do today, you have seen that the exact people who said that they couldn't function without you, that they couldn't make it, that you're an angel, that you're a godsend, somehow, when you started, they kept their lights on. Somehow, when you stopped, they were able to still have food. They still had gas in the car. They showed up everywhere they needed to go. They got their nails done. They got their hair done. They were able to, you know, get their medication. They figured it out. They were able to go on trips. They were able to figure it out without you being there. And so a lot of this is, and I'm going to talk about this in a moment as well, the stories we tell ourselves about our role in the world, what we're worth and what we are deserving of, and also whether or not we are deserving to have our own boundaries and to say no, and whether or not we can allow other people to be adults, to take care of themselves. Can we allow other adults, for those of us who are investing in family, and you have a person or a family member who always is on the brink of eviction, who's always on the brink of not being able to provide for their children, there's always some crisis. And here's the thing about true financial crisis, because many of us are and have been in financial crisis, and it has been because of the generosity of loved ones, of family members that truly helped us out. And some of us have given to people who were really in deep need, and it wasn't a play, it wasn't a ploy, it wasn't manipulation. And if they did not have that support, if you did not have that support, you truly are at a place where you're like, I don't know how I would have made it. For people who are perpetual and lifelong victims, that is part of a mask that they wear, because they have learned that learned helplessness is very attractive to people who lean towards financial codependency. They have learned how to optimize their sob story. They have learned how to optimize the things that happen in their life. They've learned how to participate in the sabotage of their goals and their plans. Because as long as they stay decrepit in some way, as long as they stay unable to show up, they know that this person is going to step in or that multiple people are going to step in and support them. So it is a game. So I'm talking more about the people in your life who are always, 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 always on the brink of collapse. And they're always making promises about what's going to be better. And they always have a plan, but somehow it just never quite works out. But even then, the real point is not for you to go and to analyze whether or not someone is actually playing you or deserving or whether or not a crisis is real. Because again, that's what gets you caught up. The problem with financial codependency is you continue to put yourself in harm's way financially. You continue to abandon your own financial goals, needs, your anxiety, your stress, the way your stomach balls up when these requests come in, the feeling of lack of gratitude and appreciation, or the feeling of a lot of appreciation, which at first was really great, but you are at a standstill in your life and you might even be going backwards. You might even feel like you're losing time when it comes to your investments and your savings and everything else because you're constantly putting out the fires of everybody else. So financial codependency and the healing is not about making sure that the people you're giving to are the right people or have the right heart. It's that you need to start to include yourself into this equation. You need to start to include whether or not, am I meeting my goals? Am I saving for my investments? Am I having enough money to take myself out for dinner, to treat myself for nails, to have spending money? Am I doing enough to make sure that I am being able to invest in therapy, that I'm able to invest in coaching programs? Hello. Well, that I'm able to invest in, you know, trips and things just for myself. But am I always having to cut myself short or even neglect my needs because I'm taking care of other people? And if that's the case, you have a right to opt out. You have a right to say no. You have a right to say, I don't have it. Because the truth is, you are not the only person in the world. You are not the only resource that this person can have. And the more you enable that person to believe that, and the more you enable yourself, that your role in this world is to take care of other people and to not take care of yourself, there's never going to be a day, a moment, a year that the giving stops. There's never going to be an amount that's, okay, that's it. I don't need any more. There's never going to be an amount that you feel like, okay, I've done enough. Because your need to overgive is compulsive. Because somewhere along the way taught you that your best quality was your ability to abandon and deny yourself. You are most worthy of love when you're giving everything you can out and you're completely empty and you're drained. And then you get a pat on the head and say, you're such a good daughter. You're such a good sister. You're such a good girlfriend. You've been trained through that type of validation affirmation. And you never had someone who taught you that it's healthy for you to pour into your own cup and have it full to completion, and that you're not pouring into your own cup halfway just to pour it back out to somebody else. That you need to be whole, restored, and full. So in romantic partnerships, I see a lot of women who will partner with people that they get to be mother to. And this is across genders, no matter who they are connected to. I've seen this in all different types of relationships. It is very common for my avoidants to find people that they need to caretake for, and then they end up resenting the fact that they are caretaking this person. At first, it was like, I don't really need anything, because as an avoidant, you are, again, trained not only from other people, but you've learned by way of being so independent to deny that you actually need emotional nurturance, that you actually need gifts for no reason, that you need someone just to look at you adoringly, right? You've learned to be strong. And you also resent the fact that you've learned to be strong, but you have learned to be strong. So when these people are undercutting you from the beginning or giving you little, you know, moments of appreciation and thanks, you feel like, okay, this is what all I need. You know, I'm simple. I don't need a lot. I'm easygoing. Again, you have been praised for being so good at being neglected. You know, for me, I remember one of the trainings that I had to do was on inner child work. I continue to do so many trainings to make sure that I am staying on top of trauma support and being able to support all of my coaching students and folks within. For those of you who don't know, I'm a therapist by trade. And I've transitioned into coaching here because I really love being able just to tell y'all stuff straight like I'm telling it to you now and really helping you operationalize this process, this healing process. It can be so big and so abstract and so ubiquitous and hard to make sense of. So one of the trainings that I went to did this inner child exercise. There's a whole bunch of moving parts, but basically you are talking to different parts of yourself. You're doing what some people may know as kind of an empty chair technique, where you're imagining or visualizing caretakers or other people who may have been abusive or neglectful or harmful to you in the room with you. And it's just a whole exercise where you're speaking and talking and relating to yourself and seeing where you're placed and seeing how they show up and all this stuff. And so one of the things that came out that I had never clocked before, because you have someone who's there to help, like a therapist or someone who's there to help facilitate that process for you, is, which I can't remember what I said, but the person who was training me, who was also a therapist, reflected back to me is that you were praised so much for being a lost child. So if there's something called the addictive family, is that still what it's called? I feel like it has been renamed since I was in school. Let me Google. I don't think that this is the main model that is taught anymore, but it's going to work for this example. So let me pause this. Okay, so you can Google a bunch of different things. You can Google the addicted family or roles in an addicted family or roles in family addiction, family roles in addiction. But the idea is in every family where there is someone who is an addict or maybe even a narcissist or something, there is the main person who has the main issues, the addiction or what have you. And then everybody else in the family plays certain roles to support this person staying sick. And so we have the enabler. So the person who's like, you know, nothing's wrong, everything's fine. They help this person in their addiction. So whether or not they're cleaning up the messes for them, they continue to lend them money to go out and buy the drugs or to go out and do whatever it is that they're doing on the side. They're always there to give compassion without any consequences or out without any limit. So that's one role that's typically talked about. Then we have the hero. So this is the person, the way that they cope is to make sure that they are no problem at all. There may be the star student. They may be the good daughter or child or son who takes care of everybody, that supplies everybody with their needs, the mediator. But they are the family hero. They're the golden one that everyone can depend on and support for support. We have the scapegoat, who might be the person who's calling everyone out and saying, like, this family is sick or this is an issue. And they may be acting out because they are tired of the dysfunction and they're tired of just playing the game. We got the mascot. So this is a person who might be the jokester in the family. And the way that they cope is by deflecting everything and, you know, finding the funny and the humor. And that's how they cope with all the trauma that's happening within the family. And then we have the lost child. And the lost child is the one that is the quiet one. This is the one that the family is like, okay, well, they're fine. They may find a lot of relief in disappearing. So whether or not it's numbing out by reading books, by literally leaving the house, by watching TV, by going within themselves, they may have their own secret addiction, but they find their safety within their own inner world and within themselves outside of the family, even though they're in the same house. So for me, I thought that I was the family hero. And, you know, punchline is you can wear multiple roles depending on your family dysfunction and what you needed as a child growing into a young adult to cope. So I always thought I was the family hero because classic oldest daughter, top of my class, worked, made money, sent money home to everybody, never caused any problems, never got in trouble, you know, all of those things. President of the Honor Society, like your girl did it all. And so I thought that that's what I was. But going into this exercise, the person reflected back to me that I was praised for being so quiet and not needing any attention, not needing any attention. I was praised for being so out of the way that they didn't have to worry about me. They didn't have to worry about parenting me. They didn't need to worry about attending to my emotional needs because I took care of it myself. And I was not a problem like whoever else was in the family or whoever else was causing problems at the time. So it was reinforced in me to stay quiet. It was reinforced in me to keep my needs to myself. And so bringing this back to financial codependency, if anything that I just shared right there relates to you, you have been praised for being so good at being neglected, being so good for minimizing, forgetting, saying that you don't need your needs, that it's not that big of a deal, you got praise for all that. So of course you get into relationships with people where your needs are not even on the table. Of course you end up getting into relationships with people where when you are just about to ask for a need, you pull it back because you have been trained for decades to not have any needs and to reflexively pull it back all on your own, right? They don't even need to say anything. You'll do it yourself. And if they do say something because your sense of safety is found in being needed by people and to being praised by people and to having this role in the family, any type of pushback from them, you will immediately fall back into line. And so you have to put yourself as one of the people you need to take care of, not only in romantic relationships, but in family relationships too. So the way I see this a lot in the clients and the students that I serve is especially in my clients and students who come from immigrant families, because this is huge, right? You have your parents, you have your grandparents, you have your extended family who has sacrificed. They've sacrificed to provide something better for you, and they have told you so. And they're not even truly exaggerating. They're telling you what's true, you know, especially if they come from, I mean, there's such a variety of between war and famines and genocide and discrimination. Like, it's just so many reasons, right? And or coming from an immigrant family where you are taught, even if it doesn't come from strife, you are taught that as part of the collective, you are here to support the family. You are here to support everyone. So what is yours is also ours. If you've ever listened to an episode of Black Girls Heal and thought that was powerful, but now what? BGH Members Club is for you. Inside, you'll get ad-free bonus episodes and an archive library of all of our current episodes without ads as well. In-depth worksheets for every topic we cover and special drop-in lessons to help you actually apply what you're learning. This is your space to reflect, grow, and make real changes in your healing journey. Join today at blackgirlsheal.org/members and take the next step towards becoming your healthiest version of you. But here's what I've noticed in the women that I have served. The women that I have served typically crosses the line from this being more about collectivism and cultural appreciation or cultural respect for your elders, for yourself, for who you are. Because usually the abuse comes from people or from family members who are narcissistic, who, again, there is no end to the amount of money, of support, time, and emotion that you can give that will ever give you any relief, that what they sacrifice for you to provide, that is not immediately stripped away and sabotaged for their own needs, for their own irresponsibility, for their own ways that they are being dysfunctional in their life, you are the one who's supposed to come in and clean it up. They don't have to take any personal responsibility for all of the fires that they're creating in their life, because you're going to be there to solve it. And if you don't, you're going to have not only their shame, but you're going to have the shame of other people. You're going to have your own personalized shame because you are a good daughter. No matter what they tell you, you are a good daughter. You are a good sister. You are a good cousin. But they have exploited the little bit of kindness and care and attention that they give you, and they magnify and they punish you for wanting to be financially stable, for wanting to provide. Because it's not even that you are not willing to give and be generous, is what I've seen with a lot of my students. It's more that they want everything, that there is never enough. And it's this empty, bottomless pit. And also what you see that you're contributing to is dysfunctional. It is more of the financial sickness and irresponsibility and maybe addictions that they have going on. And you have to fund it. Otherwise, you risk being ousted, being disowned, being smeared across the whole family, and is extremely toxic. Typically, this financial abuse is just one of the many types of abuse that you are experiencing. And then with friends, it's the same thing as romantic partners, except you're not sexually or romantically involved with them. But you may adopt friends who always have something going on, that always need a little bit of help, that are always about to be evicted, that are always in between jobs. But you also watch what they're doing in their life. They're actually not really applying for jobs. They are cussing out bosses every time they get a new job. They are saying that they can't pay their rent or pay for lights, but they are going on extravagant trips or buying new purses or leasing really expensive cars or treating other people to birthday dinners and the tab is on them and doing rounds on it. Like, you're watching how they're living their life. And they are not living one of contrition. They're not living one where, okay, you know, life is hard, so everyone deserves. I am not someone who feels like people who are in financial drain need to be eating oatmeal and grits every day. I believe that everyone, your financial status is not indicative of your value and your honor and you deserving of being safe and having pleasure and having care. What I'm talking about are people who are exploitative. I'm talking about people who are really good at manipulating other people in the system so that they are alleviated from their own personal responsibility and they can blame everybody else except for ever looking at themselves. And also people who are intentionally creating fires. So some people intentionally do it. They just know that they are going to always have someone to take care of them and they know how to play the system. Some people have learned through their own insecurity, through their own lack of self-esteem, through their own trauma, that they are going to stay in a lower place because it's safer there. Here's the thing about those people who are in that perpetual state of just, I can't get right and life is just so hard. And, you know, if you're not here, I don't know what I'm going to do. That is such, again, that's such a feigned way of, it is learned helplessness as a manipulation tactic because those people do not ever end up on the street. They end up with a boyfriend. They end up with a girlfriend. They end up with another family member. They end up subtly somehow being able to work with a coworker, or they will always, always figure it out. They are survivors. They are survivors. So with all that said about financial codependency and where part of it comes from and all that other stuff, let's talk about what I'm going to encourage you to do going forward. It is no accident that this is on the heels of, this episode is on the heels of, I think this is the third, maybe fourth episode that I've done related to no contact in a row. And it's because I want you to go into no contact with financial codependency. I typically talk about the 90-day no contact process that I talk about. It's with romantic partners mostly, but also it can be with family members. But basically you go 90 days without being in contact with the people and persons that you have romanticized, that you have trauma bonds with, so that you can reset your nervous system, so that you can heal from the trauma that makes you rush to save in, to connect, to ruminate about them, to obsess about them and completely lose yourself and not be able to be balanced in those relationships. So I encourage folks to do a whole 90-day process and I lead you month by month how to do that. And then I have a support group for folks who are doing that 90-day process. And you can learn more about that by going to blackgirlsheal.org/no contact. And you can go there as well for what I'm about to tell you to do right now. But for financial codependency, what does that look like for you to go into no contact? It means for the next 90 days, you're not giving anyone any money outside of you paying your bills, outside of you, if you go out to dinner, you are not treating other people to dinner. You are paying for yourself. If they're not treating you, you're paying for yourself and you're going to make it known if you need to. I don't know the financial, you know, rules. Everyone has different rules when it comes to them hanging out with other people. But I say that specifically because this codependency, love addiction, love avoidance are all compulsive, subconscious ways that our trauma will enact itself, which is why we always get so tripped up. We learn about these things and we're like, okay, I'm just going to make a promise to myself to have boundaries. I'm just going to not do it. I'm just going to stop. And if this was as easy as just stopping, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast right now. You'd be watching something else. You'd be doing something else. You'd be outside playing with folks. You'd be doing something else if it was that easy for you to just stop. Therapists, coaches like myself, none of us would need to exist if it was just as easy as making this decision to stop. We have been trained. We have been groomed. We have learned how to show up in this world in ways that are conscious to us and not conscious to us. And so what will happen if I just say, okay, don't give anyone any money because you have been trained to, okay, I have to give, I have to give, I have to give. Otherwise, I'm not good enough. Otherwise, I'm selfish. Otherwise, people are going to think this about me. Otherwise, I'm not deserving of having good things, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. Like all that stuff will come out sideways. So I'm not directly giving people money anymore, but now I'm covering the tab of everybody at the bar. Now I'm donating, you know, $10,000 to folks for charity. Now I am dropping money in the mailbox of the elderly lady next door. You know, she's never asked me for money, but I can see that she needs it. There's something in you that usually is not even just about helping other people. There's something in you where you have learned that you are only deserving of having so much access to pleasure, to money, to time, to energy. you have a limit around focusing on yourself in some way, and it will come out sideways. So it is very common, a very easy, simple way is for now, all of a sudden, you want to treat people to things that you might not have done before, because now you have cut off the valve in one way that you've been giving money away, but the money still, you still have this compulsion to give money away another way. And I could be wrong. I hope that anyone listening to me, and up until now, you're like, yeah, this has been me. And now you're like, that ain't me. Okay, great. Please, please, please do this for 90 days and prove me wrong. Do this for 90 days and see what happens for you on the other side. And I hope that I'm wrong. I'm hope that you're able to emerge from this process feeling just as worthy of love, feeling just as good enough as a partner, as a friend, as a loved one, as you have always been. So in partnerships, it will look like now, instead of you paying for the other things for the other person, you look around your house and see, okay, what is it that I need? And what is it that I want to invest in? You spend 90 days rebuilding your own retirement account, rebuilding your own savings, telling your partner, whatever, hey, I know I've been paying this debt for you, but I need to really start to replenish my own. So for the next 90 days, I'm going to do this, and let them get upset. And then they can go and get a job at Amazon, or they go and, you know, go on DoorDash. They can do whatever they need to do to take care of their part. Because I promise you, the person I'm talking to right now, your person is not working multiple jobs to take care of their financial responsibilities. They are not. You have been covering the overhead, which is why you're so strained. So they can go ahead and start to do the work. And you, what you're going to have to do during this process is unwire this part of yourself that makes you feel like you are doing the wrong thing, that you're blowing up the family, that you are being everything that they said that you were, right? Again, this emotional abuse and neglect that they have given you from the beginning, that they use so well, they weaponize so well to keep you in line, and then they start to put it out there. Great. That is what we needed to happen. That's what we needed to come out. Here's the difference, though. And this is why I always tell y'all that no contact is not just about not talking to people. Because when you're doing it fully, triggers are going to come out in other people and in yourself. This whole trauma pattern that has been laying below the surface, or very much at the surface, without you having the ability to people please and put out the fire, now you have a chance to do something different. You have the chance to make a different action. And all the places that you are frozen and that is hard for you to make this different action, the way that you break out of the cycle is not to go back and say that it's too hard, but it's actually for you to reach out for help. So whether or not it is talking with your therapist, if you have one, whether or not it is joining my no contact support group, if you're one of my recovery school students, you already know to come and get support and have access for us to talk about all the triggers that are coming up, to talk about the things that they're saying, to talk about the shame that you feel, the fear that you feel that someone's really going to get hurt. If you are not here financially, someone is really, really going to get hurt. And to talk about that, the way our addictive processes work and our compulsions work is that our feelings are physical. It's not just, oh, I feel sad. It's not just that I'm angry. It is your whole body feels tense and tight, and that you want to curl up in fetal position. You feel like throwing up. You're having panic attacks. You can't sleep at night. You want to just run, like your hands are shaking. This type of detox from this type of trauma pattern is so real and so scary. And you need to have support to work through it outside of your own mind, because in your own mind, you only have access to the thoughts you've been told for years, and things you've told yourself for years have kept you in the cycle. Okay. So for 90 days, you're going to not give any money to anyone. And you are going to start taking care of yourself and your own financial needs and paying your own debts down. You're going to start building your savings. You're going to add money to your retirement account. You are going to, and if you already have all that set, you're going to start taking care of yourself. Or just if you're already taking care of yourself, for some of you, you have this aversion to holding money. So as soon as money comes into your hands, you got to get rid of it. So what would it be like for you to actually learn how to actually have extra money, and that extra money not have to go to somebody else? Again, I hope at this point, 40 minutes into this episode, is clear that I'm talking about compulsive giving. I'm not talking about charitable giving that's coming from out of abundance and overflow. I'm not talking about taking care of your neighbor. I'm talking about for those of us who have lived a life of self-abandonment, and it comes out in our lives financially as well. this is for you. So here are some things for you to consider during this time. Already are a couple of questions or things for you to notice that may happen. I've already said a few of these. The first one is notice, can I keep my money or do I need to sabotage it? Do I need to give it away? Is there all of a sudden a leak that comes into my house that the plumbing was perfectly fine before? I get into a car accident. I get a crazy ticket. There's a crazy medical bill. Is there something in me energetically that is averse to money? This is, again, why we did our Healing Our Money Trauma workshop, because, which I don't know if I said at the intro, for each of those workshop series, depending on the topic, there was a workshop that correlated with it. So there was a whole 2.5-3 hour workshop about healing our money trauma, because what will happen is whatever we feel like we're deserving of, that's what we get. And it's even energetic, y'all. It is this exact reason why some of us will be like, okay, right when something is good, something bad is going to happen. It's because that's what kind of what we're looking for, is kind of what we're expecting. And not to say that you are at fault or you're creating it. I'm just saying that this world has a way of proving us right. And so if we have the power to create those types of things, we also have the power to shift our perspective and to shift our relationship with money and with people so that we can experience some more positive things as well. And I don't have the time in this episode to give all the other caveats against, you know, systemic oppression and discrimination and inflation here in the United States and corporate greed. And I just want you to give me the benefit of the doubt that I know and acknowledge all those things. And when it comes to our money and our trauma and the ways that we may have our own relationship with money, that's also its own separate entity that we can deserve, that we need to look at, to make sure that we make the best decisions in this big giant bubble of all these other things that are intersecting and hitting us, right? If I have a part of me that is hard for me to make healthy, sane, full, rich decisions for myself, it doesn't matter what oppression is coming at me or not, because I'm going to end up being my own worst enemy. So looking at my relationship first is what's most important. The next thing that I want you to consider, do you sometimes have moments in your life or seasons in your life where, yeah, you can see yourself kind of giving a lot of money away and being like really overgenerous and feeling that strain? And then you look back and you're like, I'm okay right now. And I don't do that. And that's not all the time. And during those moments, is it because you're currently caretaking somebody else and it hasn't gone to the point of strain yet? Is it that you are sometimes really good at telling other people no because you're supporting someone in your household, you're supporting a family member, and you're sponsoring someone else's lifestyle, but it feels so normal to you because it's what you've always done? So the main thing that we're looking at, or one of the main things we're looking at, right, is am I able to financially take care of my needs? Am I actively spending money on my investments, on my savings, on my pleasure things just because for me? Am I able to hold and have money and have it in excess and not feel shame or guilt around it? Am I able to do all of that? And then because I have excess and I can give comfortably to this person and I still have excess, or am I constantly, I don't know, paycheck to paycheck, limit to limit, moment to moment, because I'm taking care of me and all these other people or other person as well? And because I'm so strapped in this area, it's easier for me to say no and have boundaries in all these other areas, right? Is there a big moment that I'm paying for? Am I paying all of a sudden for somebody's tuition right now? Am I paying for a family member's funeral that it didn't have life insurance? Am I paying for a giant birthday party and baby shower? Am I sponsoring plane tickets for people to go someplace, right? Have I found some big thing for me to spend a whole lot of money on? And so it's easier for me to say no in other areas of my life. Again, I already said this a few times. Is my giving causing strain in myself where I'm not able to take care of myself? Also, the thing for you to consider during this time is your thoughts about yourself. And do you feel good enough? Do you feel like a good person? Do you feel worthy? Do you feel as if you are the source and the problem for all the ills in somebody else's life? That is a lot of responsibility for you to put on your human body and heart, when this other person has their own life and journey that was before you and is going to be after you. That person is in charge of themselves, but you are in charge of your thoughts about yourself. So can you be curious about what are some of the things that you're telling yourself during these 90 days? You're just listening to this episode. What comes up in you right now when you even think about not giving money to other people for 90 days? And again, I already said, can you save and hold money during this time? For some of you, you do not have, it's not that you have an aversion to money. Some of you are very financially stable and well off and secure and comfortable, but there is a part of you that feels as if you have to compulsively give. Otherwise, it means something negative about you. And so that's what we are looking at. And you have to compulsively give even when you don't feel good about it. So those are cycles that we're starting to break. Now, here's what you can do after the 90 days. Because again, I believe that codependency at its core is about generosity, hope, it's about spirit, it's about optimism, it's about kindness, it's about community, it's about togetherness, it's about tribehood. I think that those are all qualities that what makes a healthy family and society and just makes us all great is when it goes into the excess, right? So after the 90 days, after I've gotten clear about my relationship with myself, the trauma that's underneath this codependency, clearing all this stuff out, then I still am hopefully on the other side of this, a generous person, or maybe I'm not. Maybe this has truly been a trauma response and I am more someone who I need to focus my funds and what I do in other places. And I have not been able to do that. I've not been able to take care of my own children. I've not been able to fund my own business. I've not been able to go and travel and do what I want to do, whatever it may be. And so now that I'm not funneling this through other people, now I can actually take care of the things I've actually wanted to. Great. For some of you, you are still going to maybe be some of that, but also still be generous. So what I've told my clients to do, so I'm going to tell y'all to do, is that you need to figure out what your budget is. You need to have a budget for how much it is that you're going to share with folks, and you do not tell anybody what that number is. So if you need to put your mama on an allowance, let's say you plan that you're going to help your mama out with $200 to $500 a month or $2,000 to $5,000. Whatever your alignment is, whatever is comfortable for you, where you can still meet your financial goals and take care of yourself and be not only just okay, you need to aim to be comfortable. Whatever you think comfortable is probably less than what you need because you've been so used to neglecting yourself your whole life. So I'm just going to say you need to shoot to be very, 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 very comfortable because it's probably going to end up leaning for some of you just being okay. Well, whatever number it is, you do not tell your mama, hey, every month I'm going to give you this amount, especially, again, we're talking about people who are drained. So for some of you, what I'm about to say doesn't make sense because your mother is healthy. She is responsible. She is appreciative. She is not a narcissist. She's not going to exploit you and criticize you and shame you and guilt you and drain you and use your money and gamble it away in a casino the next week. Like she is going to actually use it for good stuff, right? I'm not talking to y'all. I'm talking to those of you where throughout this episode, you're like, this is about me and this is about the dysfunctional people in my life, right? So we're talking to people with the dysfunctional relationships with their mothers around money. You do not tell her if you will not be able to sleep at night, just letting your mama not have any money and suffer, fine. You don't tell her, hey, I put aside X amount of money for you every month because once she knows that number, she's going to double it. There's never, with people who are exploitative, there's never enough. There's never enough money, time, attention, care, sacrifice that you're going to be able to give them that they're ever going to turn around and say, thank you. I feel full. I'm satisfied. So you don't tell her. You just know what the number is. And then if you got it, then you got it. And you share it. And on the times and months that she may not ask you for money, then you just save it so that it can roll over to the next time. And it could just be a little bit extra if you want it to be. But it is totally okay for you to put this money in your budget as a line item that you stick to. Okay. Some of us, as we go through this process and we work through healing our money trauma, you are going to learn that what you think your relationship is with money may not be what you thought it was, because you may have in your head that you're really good with money, but you find a way to leak money out. And so without having this buffer, without having this, what felt like this real obligation that you couldn't say no to, once you start to say no to it, you're only left with your relationship with money yourself. You may see that you might actually need some more boundaries with yourself when it comes to money, when it comes to your mindset around it, when it comes to the decisions that you're making and not making for yourself. And that's okay. And that's what recovery is for. That is what hope is for. Okay. So there, again, are so many different resources that I've shared this episode to help you get started in this process. Okay. We have the no contact group. If you're doing this for 90 days, I will be there to support you for 90 days throughout this process. Just remember, whenever you join the group, make sure that you share that you're here working on the financial part too, so that we can check in and support you with that. You can learn more about that by going to blackgirlsheal.org/no contact. And then if you need to heal in this money trauma stuff that has brought you to this place where you have an unhealthy relationship with money, with compulsive giving, gambling, debting, hoarding, feeling worthy, all that stuff, you can get access to that workshop by going to blackgirlsheal.org/money. And you have lifetime access to both of those things. Okay. And then, of course, like I said, my recovery school students, I got you. And you can learn more about the recovery school by going to therecoveryschool.com. But I'm really suggesting those first two smaller programs first to deal with this immediate issue, because you want to work on the things that are on fire in your house. Like if we walk into your house and, you know, the house is on fire, we need to put that out before we worry about what kind of curtains to hang on the wall or what kind of sofa to pick for the living room. We need to get rid of all the things that are sabotaging and dangerous to us first. Okay. So that's it for now. I'm sending you all so much love. You got this. I believe in you. And please let me know if this episode was helpful for you. And we'd love to hear thoughts and what you learned. That's it. Talk to y'all later. As always, take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Black Girls Heal. If this episode helped you in any way, please be sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share it with someone you love. And if you're ready to go deeper and turn what you're learning about here into real life change, join us inside the BGH Members Club. You'll get ad-free bonus episodes, powerful worksheets about every topic we discuss here, and exclusive lessons to help you apply the healing tools we talk about. You can join today at blackgirlsheal.org/members. And as always, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week.